It is time for pet files. And you know what? We don't have the dogs this morning.
Why not?
The dogs were deleted by accident. So
how do you like that?
I can imitate a dog.
That's all right. It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet of Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning.
That was pretty good.
That was a pretty good imitation.
And what's even better is he didn't do Muttley. We've got a listener who, isn't that right, Muttley?
Muttley.
Yes. Is that Dudley Do Right's dog?
Yeah.
So
he can do an imitation of Muttley.
An okay. Opening that we, yes. All right. So anyway, to the questions, to the barricades. Janine in Woodstock. I keep hearing about this pond algae situation, and of course I'm scared stiff because I live out in the country where there's a pond just about every 20 yards. My 3 lab Rottweiler mixes usually follow me off-leash on our trail walks, and lately I'm trying to wrangle them all on leashes. It's stressing us all out. The thing I can't get a handle on is how am I supposed to know what ponds are safe and what aren't. Also, this whole thing raises the issue of duckweed and weather that is equally as dangerous. Thanks for your advice.
So I'm not sure what the issue with duckweed is or weather.
well, they exist, so I'm sure there's an issue.
Right. So what I can say is that my understanding is that I haven't heard of. I know that there was some talk about dogs being becoming ill from algae in New Jersey, but I haven't found anything to substantiate that. I don't know if you have, but in any case, it was some dogs in North Carolina that took ill from blue-green algae bloom. And there's a difference between duckweed, a big difference between duckweed and algae. So the duckweed looks like a plant growing on top of the water. So it looks kind of like little lentil seeds. And so when you're up close, you can see that it is not algae. Algae looks more like a paint spill on top of a pond. And it usually doesn't smell very good. And it kind of looks like green or blue or even sometimes red paint. It is slimy and usually doesn't smell very good. So, and sometimes there's foam, too. So you can tell the difference by looking whether you have an algae bloom. Now, the problem with that, this in standing water, is that the algae overgrows, and it is because the weather is warm, and I think often because we have all of these nitrates and nitrites in the water from fertilizers. So you get runoff, and you get these blooms, which has been a problem in lakes in this area for many years. So some of the algae can be toxic. So if you're really concerned about it and you're not familiar with the ponds in the area that you're walking and you have your dogs off leash, then yes, that can be a problem. I would definitely check out the ponds and see what they look like. But the cooler the weather is going to be, the less likely that we're going to have a bloom. So keeping the dogs on leash, if you're really concerned about it and there are that many ponds, then that's what I would suggest. But if you can have your dog stay close to you off-leash, and that you can train them to do that. You've got to carry a pouch with you and carry lots of treats, but usually you can train them to come back and touch your hand every few minutes if you work on that, or even maybe train one of them and keep two on leash, that kind of thing, so that you can keep them fairly close and you know where you're walking and you know where the ponds are. It's really more of a problem with stillish water, and you're going to be able to see those areas where it is a problem. And if your dog comes back wet, you know, go and check it out. If what you need to do is really rinse them off. My understanding is that just contact with with a toxins in the water, if you have one of these really toxic algae blooms, even if you wash it off, that may still be a problem. But you don't want them to be drinking the water, and you don't want them to be licking it off of their bodies. So hopefully explain the difference between duckweed and algae.
You did a very good job, and also the main thing, and this is the main thing is if the water looks yucky and it looks like there's slime on top of it, don't let them go in. And because lab Rottweiler, anything that starts with Labrador is treat responsive. It just is.
Usually, yes, but they also are crazed about the water sometimes, and so not allowing them to go in, I understand, can be super difficult if they're not on leash.
Right, but getting leash tangled in the on the trail is also a drag. Sometimes you can almost say also see if you can find a different. Two things.
A different place to walk.
See if you can find a different place to walk for this moment. As you say, the weather is getting cooler, so that's not going to be as much of an issue. And I never heard about the blue-green algae situation getting further than what you had said a few weeks ago in New Jersey, south. If that had even happened. And if
the concern is that it is going to get getting warmer here, and so we may be more likely to. And of course, we all have fertilizers running into
standing water.
Everything,
right?
So that is difficult. So let's get out there and talk more about that.
Right, and let people know. When we did mention this a couple of weeks ago, you were also clear. Running water. Find a river.
Would be a better, absolutely better choice. Although they can be swept away, so you have to
be conscientious. That's true. But what I am absolutely noticing, because everyone has become so enscreened, is that the usual judgment stuff that older people grew up with just the usual differential doesn't exist. It's like, wow, is that river running high? Maybe I won't open the car door. It just somehow doesn't seem as readily. I mean,
there's a lot to distract us too.
Yes,
but it's like we have to think ahead with dogs.
And if you're going to have a creature that you're going to be running after, and that you care about the outcome, whatever it is, then it's not about sitting home, tied up, but simply think about these things first.
Yeah, if you're going to let them out of the car when you get to someone's house, we'll look at the road and make sure there's not a dog across the road.
Right, look at the road.
No matter how well they're trained, they're going to be boom.
Right,
on.
And look at the you pull up to the place. People go on autopilot. It's totally understandable. You go to this place all the time. For example, you're about to let your dogs out of the car, and you look, and the river is in high spate. You know what? That's not the moment to go, well, that's fine. There's still time to stop yourself in a lot of situations, and then there are the things that happen, and
danger's lurking everywhere.
Danger, Will Robinson. But that being said, much of it is avoidable. Danger's lurking. That's our new motto for the day. All right, Dana in Pittsfield. When my Shih Tzu Maxine was a puppy, she regularly used to try to drink her own urine, and if I didn't catch her in time, she'd succeed. She stopped when she got older. I don't know if that was from my training her to stop or she just grew out of it. Lately, she's 4. She's been trying to do it again. Why does this happen? She eats a good quality diet and doesn't have any health problems.
This is usually a behavior problem. Definitely, I'm assuming that you've had her urine checked and she's been checked by a veterinarian. There is a congenital problem that causes dogs sometimes to leak, to spill glucose in the urine. It's not diabetes mellitus, but it is a problem. It's like a Fanconi-like syndrome is what it's called. And I have had glucose in urine of dogs who don't have diabetes. And so that is a possibility there. Definitely check that out. Make sure that there's no glucose or sugar in the urine that's enticing her to drink her own urine, but typically it is that they have either they were raised in an area where they had to try to clean up their own mess. So a small cage left in for too long. This may be, before you obtain the puppy or the rescue dog, and trying to clean up after themselves, or maybe they were left with their mom and watched her cleaning up after puppies all the time. It's that type of thing that becomes a behavior problem, and it sounds like you trained her out of it and that she just lost that training. Sometimes dogs, that will happen with all kinds of behavior problems if we don't constantly remind them of that, of their training. And sometimes they lose those training bits when there's some stress in the household or in the family. So think about all those things. You can train her not to do that. You can, she can understand that you don't want her to do that. And also distraction, lots of exercise, maybe a obedience class. That's really what I would do. So a couple things, have her checked out, have her urine checked out. If all is fine, then the training is the way to go.
Yeah, it's funny. A few years ago when we started doing this, it meant many of the questions defaulted to diet. Let's check their diet, let's modify their diet. And I am noticing just an underlying trend is check their training. There's a lot you can do with training, and there really is a lot you can do with training.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing in the diet that I can imagine that would cause her to drink, you know.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that you've said that you've changed. So it is an uncommon problem, but it's one that I have seen before.
All right.
It's the same thing with coprophagy or eating of the stool. You know, it is a learned behavior or one that comes from a small enclosure, and dogs clean up after themselves.
All right, Tim in Pine Plains, we have two donkeys and a quarter horse. The other day, my wife stumbled across something on the internet about something called Eastern equine encephalitis, also known as triple E. We don't want to panic, but I have to admit we're concerned. Do you know anything about this? We need some clear info that's not from freaked out folks on the web. The horse is 14 years old, if that matters, and has Cushing syndrome. The donkeys are rescues, so we're not sure, but we think they're around 25.
So there's a good vaccine. Most horses and donkeys are vaccinated against Eastern equine encephalitis, Western equine encephalitis, and tetanus. And it's a combination vaccination. So really good protection with it. And I believe, I haven't done equine medicine for 20 years, but I think that they are revaccinated yearly to protect them. And it is carried by, so it is a Eastern equine encephalitis is...
is it mosquito-borne?
Carried by mosquitoes, yes. Yeah. And so, but it's directly from birds. My understanding is it's directly from birds to the mosquito. And so it's in sort of swampy, wooded areas where the mosquitoes become infected. And then they can bite people or they can bite horses and spread the disease. So the good news is that there's a good vaccine to prevent this in horses, and that horses are a dead-end host, and people are also a dead-end host. And that means that the number of organisms in the bloodstream never gets high enough to actually infect a mosquito. So if you've got a horse with it, you're not at higher risk because you have a horse with EEE, at higher risk of getting it yourself. That I shouldn't have said it that way.
But
I guess
if you have
mosquitoes in the area clearly that are carrying it. However, the horse is not going to transmit it to a mosquito that will transmit it to you.
Right. And again, it would be so incredibly helpful just even saying, oh, there's a vaccine for it. My understanding is that they're vaccinated regularly. You know, if every internet page said that, just get your
horse. That would be really helpful.
Wouldn't
right?
it be helpful?
And the donkeys can have it too.
Yeah.
Can get the vaccine. So I think that would be absolutely recommended right now when even people are getting EEE. It's a very serious encephalitis and can cause really serious sickness and death in equines as well as people.
Yeah. So it's definitely made the news, and it's been on Connecticut News, et cetera. But once again, if there's a vaccine for it, and if you're... if your critters are vaccinated, and they should be, especially because...
Yeah, even with a horse with Cushing's, you know, your veterinarian, I'm assuming, is treating the Cushing's disease, so call them and talk to them about vaccination.
Right. As I said, every single webpage... actually, we had something over a mouse yesterday that got 9 people in an email chain back and forth for 32. We were counting the number of messages, which was just pretty much, well, okay, make sure you got a covered garbage. There's a mouse in an apartment in New York. Make sure you've got a covered garbage can.
Doesn't that happen often?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's what I mean. If every web page simply said, there's a vaccine for this, we'd have just much less, whatever the word I'm looking for is.
Confusion.
Yeah.
Well, and you can't always believe everything there that you read, too. So that's a good question to bring up, this disease. Some people in Connecticut have died from it.
Yes, this is true. All right. Glasses, vamp. Hallie and Kanan, is there any reason to have indoor cats on flea medication? My boyfriend insists that fleas can get into our apartment under cracks in the floor or whatever, but in my opinion, it doesn't make sense to dose them with toxic chemicals if they never mingle with other cats or dogs. It's true there are dogs in the building that go in and out, but honestly, it just seems insane to me.
So if the dogs in the building are going in and out, then they're probably dropping, if they're not really well protected, then they're dropping flea eggs, which is the concern. Because through the life cycle, the eggs then can, it's possible for you to carry some eggs into the house on the bottoms of your shoes. It's possible for you to open the door and have them swooshed into the house. It is blown in, I think the risk is probably pretty low. A live flea can live for months without a host, so it can live on debris. That it can eat debris on the floor type of thing. So it certainly is a possibility. You're taking a fairly low risk if you know that the dogs are protected and if you know that there's no fleas, in the hallway, if your door opens into the hallway type of thing. If those hallways are cleaned regularly, if they're not, if they don't have carpets in them, et cetera, then certainly the risk is low. But fleas can also be carried in with rodents. So a lot of places do have rodents, and so you have the potential to have a flea infestation. Rodents can pick up the fleas from other cats and dogs or other apartments and then transmit them to yours. The flea, likes to stay on the animal. They like that higher body temperature. But the cat flea is the most common one that infects cats and dogs. And they prefer that higher body temperature for sure. But they can infect a mouse and can be transmitted from one place to the other. So with 2 cats, if you don't have any mice, that's great, but they might try to catch the mouse and become infected. So the risk is low, but boy, once you get an infestation of fleas, wish you'd never taken the risk.
You wish you'd never asked that question. So
yeah, so you really have to weigh the pros and cons and using something on your cats maybe in the worst seasons of the year when there's going to be the highest number of fleas around, which is in the warmer weather, might be a good idea. They need humidity and warmth and movement in order for those eggs to hatch. And so especially when we start to see a lot of fleas in August, the warmth and the humidity.
Right, but if they're dormant and the heat comes on, I don't know. I've had
If you have run a humidifier, but usually it's too dry.
Yeah.
Often it's too dry, but I have seen fleas in the wintertime as well. So it's a personal choice as far as risk goes, risk versus benefit. I understand the idea of putting chemicals on your pets. I also am not willing myself to live with fleas.
Right. And is there any, I can't imagine there's anything you could do externally, paint? Yeah, spray or paint in the house.
Well, I think that you're really probably exposing yourself to more toxin if you're going to do that. Yeah. I'm not sure I would want to do that. But you mean right around the door, maybe spray something on the carpet or the hallway outside of your door.
Yeah,
if you're in an apartment complex and your door opens to the outside, then, you know, it's unlikely that you're going to carry very much into the house. If you take your shoes off when you get into the house, it's probably a good idea instead of walking around. But, you know, if you get a couple of eggs, say you get 5 eggs that are blown into the house, they hatch out, they get on a cat.
Yeah, you're...
Then you get a blood meal, right, and you're going to have hundreds of eggs within 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Literally hundreds of eggs.
So,
there's exponential growth there.
So I guess what I'm going to say, again, pulling rank as someone who's been around for a while, I'm going to say it's worth the risk. And in this instance, and so this is, even though this is Pet Files, I'm taking this upon myself as a civilian.
Okay.
It's worth the risk. It's like, protect the cats. If there are people going in and out of their dogs, if there's any chance whatsoever that they're going to enjoy being a flea host, just put the stuff on them.
Yeah, unless you have an unhealthy cat.
Of course.
In which case, you talk to your veterinarian. But, yeah, I mean, living in the country, if my cats are going to stay indoors all the time, my dogs are protected, you know, I may not. I certainly won't probably put something on them, but I come back and forth with ticks and fleas on me. So, you know, I would definitely treat them in the spring, summer, fall, probably not over the winter.
Okay. And as ever, we thank you so much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.